Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody. Welcome to the show. It is the Left of Straight Show. I'm your host, Scott Fullerton. Thanks for tuning in today. It is Monday, March 19th. I hope you all were not assaulted by a leprechaun over the weekend and had a very happy St. Patrick's Day weekend. A lot of fun. I hope you guys had some fun and got to go out and enjoy it. A Friday night and St. Patrick's Day combined equals a little bit of fun out there. So it can be a lot of fun. I actually took my buddy Jeremy out for his belated birthday lunch on Friday. Brought him to this really cool restaurant chain that's only in Pennsylvania right now. It's called, and I love the name, it's called Burgatory. Burgatory. And it's all kind of angels and demons kind of background and looks. And they are a burger bar, obviously. And they have great build-your-own. They have a couple of specialty burgers, but they have great build-your-own burgers. They have a sheet of paper where you fill out what you want. And you have your choice of like six different kinds of meat or meatless options, five different kinds of buns, five different kinds of dustings from like Cajun to salt and pepper to garlic, all these things. Five different types of sauces. Then you have all your different toppings, your different cheeses, and it's just a good time had by all. So Jeremy and I had a good time out there, and that was a lot of fun on Friday. And then Saturday, I took mom to her happy place casino. So brought mom to the casino. We had a good time. We didn't win on Saturday, but we didn't lose big, and we had a great afternoon out. Went to Pittsburgh yet again, my Pittsburgh weekend. So that was a lot of fun. And yesterday was just a kickback and relax kind of day, except for if you guys are following me on social media, and I sure hope you are, you check out the Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We have had the weirdest thing happen at the house. We have this red robin that has been attacking our front windows trying to get in. We have a big open bay window in front, okay? So it says three different sections across and three sections up and down. And this robin just won't stop trying to peck its way in through the window panes. It jumps on all the top six of them, goes from one to the other, just hopping onto the ledge and pecking and trying to get in and flying into it. And it's just like a demon possessed. I don't know whether to call control or somebody can do an exorcism. It's crazy. So you have to take out the looks. We're on day five now. We have 5 days in a row. I've heard all sorts of different things, so feel free to chime in on social media what you think. I heard anything from it is early spring mating season, and they are looking at the reflection and seeing other males and trying to establish their dominance, to my good psychic friend Lewis Mabee says it is is the soul of a past spirit, a woman who used to live in the kitchen. And he put "lived" in quotation marks, so I don't know what that means. If it was someone who lived in the house and just spent a lot of time in the kitchen, or actually lived in our kitchen area, I don't know. So lots of theories out there, but it's just crazy. It's driving my poor mother up a tree. It's right in the living room there in our front windows, and she sits there and watches her classic movies all day long. So it is pretty hilarious. and it's pretty fun. So yeah, you definitely want to check that out. If you're not following me on social media, please do. You can follow me at Twitter and Instagram at Left of Straight, LeftOfStr, and the number 8. And on Facebook, it's the Left of Straight Show page, or you can go to my personal page, Scott Fullerton. I'm always looking to get new friends on there. So yeah, check that out. Great shows for you this week. Today we have on the amazing Bane Gibby. If you don't know who Bane is, she is a hilarious comedic actress. Been on such great shows as, oh my God, she's been on everything. She had an appearance on Mad Men. She's been on The Comeback. She's been on Two Broke Girls. She's just everywhere, written in her own stuff. And so she's going to be on just a little bit. She's also in our good friend Stan Zimmerman's Sex and Execs that we had the entire cast on last week as well. She couldn't make it, so I'm very excited to have her in this week. But she plays the hilarious one of the secretaries, Val. So she'll be calling in just a couple of minutes here. And then tomorrow we have musician coming on, Stephen, and I've got to remember his name correctly, but Stephen Davis. He's a great musician, does a lot of Frank Sinatra for you old-time singers. It's Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis and Tony Bennett and all these great old singers. And he's going to be on the show tomorrow. Wednesday, we'll be standing on our soapbox and just getting ready for the big California trip. I'm going to be in California in 2 weeks from tomorrow. I'm actually leaving 2 weeks from the past Saturday. We're taking the train out to California. And going to spend a week there from Tuesday the 4th through Tuesday the 11th. A lot of things planned. We're going to have a Universal Studios Day on Monday the 10th. I'm having a big meet and greet party with a lot of my previous guests on Sunday the 9th. I got some gift baskets donated. Thank you so much. If you have not checked out cbtcandle.com, that's C as in cat, B as in boy, T as in Terry, candle.com. The great Scott Travis over there is hooking me up with some gift bags for all of my guests coming to the celebrity party. And I want to give a big shout out. I'm going to be talking about him all through the month of April, at least. And I'll have him call into the show one time. We'll talk about his candles because he has great candles by different celebrities in the LGBT community. He has a great fragrance, Proteus, by Michael Vaccaro, who's been a guest on the show. So big shout out to him for helping me out that way. I have a couple of my Food Network friends looking into getting us some donated cupcakes and goodies. It's going to be a fun little party out in West Hollywood on the 9th. And there'll be more stuff added as we go along. I'll probably do a live show on Wednesday the 5th if I'm not at the Ellen DeGeneres show or the James Corden late show taping. So I will let you know more as that comes up. So we have that going on, all sorts of great stuff in the news. We're going to go ahead and Beauty and the Beast was a beast at the box office this weekend. If you have not heard, the biggest March opening ever, $170 million in North America alone, 300 and something when you combine worldwide revenue. So obviously a little gay controversy did not hurt the opening weekend. It was huge. And been getting great reviews by everyone in our community. Good reviews overall. And big way to go to Disney for the Beauty and the Beast live action. And it's really funny because coming up this weekend is the Power Rangers movie, which I got to see just because I love kitsch funny. And Power Rangers are coming out this weekend. It's been about the last month and a half that it's coming out, right? But now that we're a couple days away from it, one of the big articles in the news I read every morning to see what's going on in the LGBT community is Power Rangers is going to have the first openly gay superhero on screen. And I guess the Yellow Ranger, Trini, is going to have some issues with her sexuality in the movie. It's going to play an important part in the movie. Now, they haven't mentioned it word one until they found out that Beauty and the Beast had this great opening after it's had this controversy for about 4 weeks. Of the LGBT thing. So I think that is hilarious personally. So a lot of fun in that. And speaking of that, I got to play for you. You know, I love me little Randy Rainbow, who's been doing these hilarious parodies, primarily political lately. such things on Kellyanne Conway and her toaster spying on her and alternate facts and things on Trump. So Randy is just hilarious. If you're not following him on Twitter and watching his YouTube channel, you got to check it out because I've said it before, but he's the kind of guy that does the interviews in the line of late shows, sort of like the Stephen Colbert's and the John Oliver's, where they do the interview where you're taking interview clips that the person said in real life and adding it to their own deal. And of course, Randy adds musical elements to it. So we're going to play out here while we get ready to bring the lovely Bane Gibby on the line in just a couple of seconds. I'm going to play out to Randy Rainbow's newest one. It's called Kill the Release, a little take on Kill the Beast from Beauty and the Beast, talking about the LGBT controversy on that. So it's a lot of fun. Play that for you. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the lovely and talented Bane Gibby. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Disney's live-action musical version of Beauty and the Beast hits theaters later this month.
Feature Disney's first gay character.
The film's gay moment has been blown out of proportion.
So-called gay propaganda.
A gay character in a Disney movie will promote tolerance. It'll pollute your children's minds with the idea that who they are is okay.
How could Disney make this choice? How could Mickey Mouse agree?
He should spell his name MICKEY LGBT.
They'll inject their propaganda until everyone is gay. So it's time to boycott Disney now.
It's time to make them pay.
Bizarre, this progressive open-mindedness is something that you don't see every day.
Ow. Leave your kids in the car. It received a PG rating, but in this case, PG stands for pretty gay.
Keep it far from your niece and your nephew.
Or your nephew might act like your niece. Get your purse, leave your snack, and we're not coming back till it's straight.
Good and straight! Kill the release!
When I bring my young children to a lavish musical with fabulous costumes starring the hot guy from Downton Abbey and featuring six-time Tony Award winner Audra McDonald, it isn't to make them gay. It's to make them extra straight. I say we kill the release. Who's with me?
I am.
Yeah. There's a twist in the plot, and not only is he gay, he's introspective and he's ethical as well. But he likes other guys, so ignore those other traits and teach your children that he'll probably burn in hell.
There's no sex, but there's lots of acceptance. Rather queer for a period piece.
And it's hard to risque. Grab your family and take them to 50 Shades of Grey.
Now there's a good old-fashioned love story. Why can't we go back to the wholesome days of Disney films? When there was a hiding on every poster and Pocahontas was dating Mel Gibson.
We are scared, so we ban anything we don't condone, and this new movie has gay undertones at least. There's no cause for alarm, and it won't do any harm, but let's pretend we're up in arms.
Speaking of arms...
Kill the release! Kill the release!
Kill the release!
Kill the release!
Ooh, cute dress, though.
And we are back. That is Rainbow with Kill the Release, his parody on the Beauty and the Beast, big LGBT controversy out there. A lot of fun. If you're not following Randy on Twitter and on YouTube, please get thee there right away. Guys, my first guest, I'm so excited. She's a fantastic, talented, beautiful actress, director, writer. She's worked on such projects as The Comeback, Enlightened, and she's currently co-starring in the hit new web series Sex and Execs. I had the pleasure of talking to some of her co-stars last week, and they couldn't say enough about her. Can't wait to talk all about. She has a book out, a couple of comedy albums. Please welcome to the show the beautiful, the talented, and very funny Bane Gibby. Bane, how are you?
I'm great. That was quite the introduction. Thank you.
Well, you are quite the young lady, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate your time.
Oh, my gosh. It's my pleasure.
You are just so great. You've been on so many things. I had Parvesh on last week, and I swear I sprayed my little finger going through IMDb. You guys have so much stuff on your resume. It's just awesome. I love how little stuff on it.
That's really really nice to hear, although I don't want you spraining anything. But
I know.
Yeah,
but
you
there's
know.
So much interesting stuff on there. And then, of course, Parvati told me that half of his is made up because I called him on a couple of things. I never did that. It's like, oh, never mind. I'm not listening to IMDb anymore.
No, I think everything I look at mine pretty closely. Everything on there is totally legit. You can verified by me. So
there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
If only our president did as much, we'd be doing good right now. I'm telling you.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all been checked, fact checked by me. such a great cast that we have for Sex and Exec. So many really, really fun people. Parvesh being just one of them. Amazing.
Well, we're going to talk all about that a little bit. Let's start with give my listeners a little background on you. You're an East Coast girl in California right now, right? Talk about.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in New Jersey, right off the Garden
nice.
State Parkway. and I lived in New York City for a while. And then I made my way here to Los Angeles kind of by accident because I was such an East Coaster, and I never, ever envisioned that I would live in L.A., mostly because I had come here once right after college, and it was like the vacation from hell. Like, you know, when you go to just like everything that can possibly go wrong goes wrong. And so I remember sort of like running back to the airport to get home and thinking, that is the last time, like, you know, I'll ever go to L.A. That was just – everything just went wrong. And of course, you know, a few years later, I got this job to work on an HBO show called The Comeback, and I think it's going to be just a couple weeks. And so I, you know, pack a bag and I come out here, and what was supposed to be 3 weeks in L.A. turned into 3 months in L.A. And of course, it was the total opposite of the vacation from hell. It was like, you know, a dream come true.
Nice.
And then I ended up just staying, you know, I just sort of ended up staying and staying and staying, and then eventually going back and getting rid of my apartment in Brooklyn. And so I sort of moved here kind of by accident, and I love it so much that it makes me laugh to think about my first impression of LA, which was just like, it was just, I couldn't understand how anyone could possibly live here, and it was just because of a series of like unfortunate events that had happened on this vacation. So
I hear you. I'm the same.
Yeah, like it can happen. You know, there's things can go things can go wrong. So I'm an East Coaster who ended up here, and I really love it, especially because it, you know, in the last week where I was walking around in flip flops and I was checking in on, you know, family members who are back there who are saying, yeah, we got a foot of snow and it's still coming down.
Right.
Like, you don't want to know what I'm doing right now, you know.
You don't need to rub it in. I'm actually based here out of Northeast Ohio right now. So, yeah, I hear you. I did the opposite. I was born and raised in Southern California. I've been banished to Ohio now for 15 years. So I got all the cold and I'm missing the LA weather.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, yeah, it's beautiful out here today. It's a beautiful California day, but I do miss the East Coast, and I miss, you know, New York City. I still have a lot of friends there, but I really have grown to love LA, and it does feel like home at this point. So the happy accident for me.
Yeah, and there's so much being filmed now in New York. I mean, that television industry is really booming there. You can be back anytime. You never know, because it's just going crazy.
I know,
there.
That's kind of what I hope. I still have so many friends and family there. I kind of hope, I have a dream that I get, you know, some sort of extended job there, and I get to sort of, you know, have an excuse to stay for a couple months and live in the city and, you know, see everybody. So that would be, you know, that would be ideal. So we'll just
nice.
Put that out into the universe. Yeah. East Coast.
There you go. That's
climbing.
The way to do it. Yeah, our buddy, a good friend of our show, Katie, she just put herself a one-woman show together to just so she could go back to New York. She's in L.A. now, too, but she put in, she's going for like 3 months to play in New York, and she's just having a blast. So, yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to do it, too, you know, and then it's, tax deductible because you're just because you're there for work, but you're having a blast.
I'm smelling comedy album number 3 coming down. Too much fun. Well, talk about that. You've done 2 comedy albums, really, right?
I have. When I was living in New York, I really wanted to be, you know, an actor on TV and in film, and I had the dream of doing Broadway. And of course, I was in that phase where nothing was really happening for me. I kind of couldn't, you know, make things happen on that level. And so I was doing a lot of sketch and improv, and within a sketch group that I was in, I started writing these funny songs, and I started writing funny songs for myself and just seeking out stand-up venues. And I was sort of running around all over the city every night and going up in different venues just to sort of get up in front of people and perform and try out these songs and make people laugh, just so that I had something I was doing and creating, because you get so tired as an actor of waiting for someone to give you an audition, waiting for someone to give you the job. And so this is a way of just kind of generating my own stuff. And so then finally I had written enough songs to kind of make an album. But again, you know, when you're sort of trying to do everything on a budget, a way to do an album pretty simply was to just record a live show, you know, just
right.
do a show where you do like an hour of material and record it live. And so I did that twice. I made these comedy albums. And what was really cool about the whole thing was that the comedy album is what actually led me to getting to audition for Sex and the City, which was my very first TV role, because completely coincidentally, somebody gave the casting director of Sex and the City my CD with no agenda, just a friend of hers who said, I have this and it's really making me laugh. You should listen to this. And the casting director, whose name was Cammie Hickman, she said she was listening to it while she was working out and it was making her laugh. And so she called me in for an audition for Sex and the City, and that ended up being my very first TV job.
How awesome is that? That is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I was wondering how the albums went, because you were such, you know, I wouldn't say I see you so much as physical comedy, but I do know you had all that background. You were upgrade Citizens Brigade or whatever, and you do a lot of physical comedy. I never knew how comedians worked a comedy album, when a lot of it has to do with, I mean, you have great delivery, I think, is what helps for you, but there's so many comedians that are so visually oriented. I think a comedy album would be weird sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, this is songs, you know, it really is just comedic songs, so it really translates. And I think what helps too is I recorded them in front of a live audience, so, you know, you hear the crowd, you hear like the clink of the glasses, you hear when they get rowdy, like so I think when you're listening to it, if you're by yourself at home or in your car, you're not just hearing these funny songs in a vacuum, you're hearing like people laughing, which, you know, they say that kind of helps, like, you know, cue your laughter. Makes you feel like you're sort of part of a crowd. Like comedy can't really exist in a vacuum. But it was cool. It was really cool at the time because, you know, when you're sort of wondering how you're going to get to your goal, you know, your main goal of being a working actor, and you're kind of doing something in the meantime, and then for that actually to lead you in some roundabout way to the very thing you're trying to get to was very affirming for me in a time when, you know, I was just sort of sitting there going, how does anybody make this happen? You know, it's so hard to be an actor, like to really get it started. And so that kind of jump-started everything, because the job on Sex and the City led to my audition for The Comeback, which then kind of changed my life and got me to LA and kind of started me off on the path of really being a working actor. So that was kind of how it all kind of started. But before that, I was really, you know, struggling, and, you know, I was teaching preschool, and I was just sort of going, I'm just over here wanting to do this, like this crazy
just
dream.
Just trying to
get
in the club. Just let me in the club, please.
Yeah. I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut over here. But you know, but it all sort of led me down this really cool path of meeting these amazing people and some very big projects. And now, you know, I feel like, you know, now I'm really sort of in the middle of, you know, doing exactly what I hoped to come here to do, which is very cool. 'Cause it's, you know, it's a tough business. It's definitely
sure.
not for the faint of heart, you know?
Well, I think that is so awesome. I want to talk about Sex Exics and a lot of your other well-known things. Let's start with some of your thing I like about Sex Exics and what you did a lot the last year or so ago is I love the web series now, how they're, I hear so much and all the people I interview on the show that even though there's 8,000 channels out there now, if you want to really do a good part, you pretty much have to make it yourself. And you've done that through two great shows that you've written and kind of directed yourself. The Life Coach cracked me up. The Tennis Lesson, I hope there's more coming because that was funny. But talk about you were doing web series when it was just kind of still happening. What kind of drew you to writing those series?
Yeah, well, it was some of the things you just mentioned where there's so much competition out there for roles and you know, you are sort of at the mercy of people picking you and saying yes. And, you know, I'm a writer as well, and so there comes a point where you go, I don't want to just go to a party. I want to be the host of the party. And I want to say what the party is going to be. And, you know, and that's kind of what writing a project for yourself and for a couple of your friends is, which is what I was doing on Life Coach and the Tennis Lesson, which is, okay, let's do something that we can, you know, have a blast and shoot this pretty simply and for a small amount of money and really showcase ourselves doing exactly what we want to do. And when I did Life Coach with my friend Kalinda Bennett, we found it, we just were so energized by doing it because I was used to being a guest on set so much, which is also wonderful. But it's a very different energy than when you're calling the shots and you get to sit there and edit it and decide. And it's very empowering to sort of do a project like that for yourself, especially because it's fairly simple to do now in comparison to 10 years ago. I mean, you can shoot stuff on your smartphone.
Right.
You can edit it, you know, if you want to. I mean, we did it on a different kind of camera, but you can literally create something in your apartment with your phone in a way that you couldn't not that long ago. And so it's just been a wonderful thing for me and something that I plan to do a lot more in the future, which is to create content. And what's funny is that I've booked a few jobs recently where they'll say, oh, I watched, you know, the Tennis Lesson, and that's part of why I hired you, because I really liked seeing your point of view and your take and what came out of your brain. And it sort of helped me get a couple of meetings or where I'm kind of pitching show ideas. So more than anything, I think it's just empowering for actors who often feel like they're spending a lot of time waiting for permission and waiting for people to say, okay, I pick you. And sometimes you work so hard to book a role on a big show and you might only be there for a day and then it's done. And then you're sort of back to, you know, trying to get the next job. And so sort of putting yourself in the position of power where you're creating something, I think does wonders for your psyche, because it makes you feel like it's not just a waiting game, that you really can create and really sort of put things into motion yourself.
Well, it also does a lot for the fans as well, because when you're doing these projects on your own, you have to do the self-promotion, all that. And I think the fans feel that connection. They get a closer connection they would, say, in a series or something, because you're doing your promotion. You're trying to get it out there. You're trying to get that noticed. And so you have that fan interaction. It makes them feel like part of the whole process. And some people are crowdfunding these waves. I think it's really building a better bridge between the audience and the creator, too. And it's kind of fun on both sides.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, because you're really getting an idea of, you know, the person and what they, you know, what they want to say, you know, whether it's, you know, comedic or dramatic. But, yeah, really kind of getting a more intimate look into them. And I mean, and I just hope, yeah, I'm hoping there's going to be another installment of the tennis lesson. I have some ideas of what we can do next. And I'm really excited that you watched those. You did your research. You really did.
I love doing research. I'm just a fan of entertainment. I'm not an actress, but I love it. Just a fan of entertainment. So the research is as much fun as the interviews for me. I just love it. And yeah, I saw every inch of it, and just, oh my goodness, Ruth was cracking me up. I mean, just not talking the middle, and it's just, oh, I was dying. I think it's gonna
be
so much
fun. I really appreciate that.
There's so many situations you could put yourself into. And I think I read that you're probably going to do it. It doesn't need to be necessarily the same character. It'll just be that kind of a setting where it's just kind of a fish out of water setting, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. She's someone who would rather be at home. And I think a lot of people sort of relate to that on a certain level. And anytime she goes out into the world, she's sort of going out into her, you know, out of her comfort zone. And I just think there's a lot, you know, of us that can relate to that, whether it's like a little bit of social anxiety or, you know,
sure,
just any time you have to sort of step into something and you go, God, what could go wrong today, you know?
Right.
that's sort of where Ruth lives all the time, is like, oh, God, what fresh humiliation is coming my way next?
Oh, I love it. I hope there's
so
much
We'll see where it goes, yeah.
it's set up perfectly. It's like, well, my therapist wants you to sign this paper, so there's so many things a therapist can send you to and get that little paper signed.
Exactly. That's the whole idea.
Loving every second of it. Now let's go, let's go from your writing these great comedy sketches to you wrote a children's book about reassuring your mother's love. How did that come about? That's kind of cool.
Oh, well, see, that came about when I was living in New York. I really wanted to write children's books, and I was, you know, trying to sort of get that going. And it just kind of got put on the back burner for a number of years because it's a really hard industry to get involved in. And when I was living out here, I started, my brothers and their wives, I have two brothers, and they started having kids. And so I had a couple of nieces and nephews. And
right.
I started making these books for their birthdays or for Christmas, and I'd get them laminated at Kinko's, and I was, you know, I'd give them as sort of these handmade gifts. And my sister-in-law said to me one Christmas, you know, these books that you're making are really, you know, really good, and they're sort of as good, if not better, than a lot of the books, you know, we buy in the store. And, you know, why don't you revisit this idea of becoming an author? And it sort of felt like the right time to sort of revisit it. So it's such an interesting industry. So I started, you know, kind of the push of putting together a writing packet and trying to get interest. And it's sort of like acting. It's like, it's really hard to get, you know, started and for someone to look at your stuff, because there's so many people who want to do it and it's so competitive.
Right.
But I ended up, you know, getting sort of a lucky break where I had put together a writing packet and I had put out on Facebook, you know, I'm kind of coming up against all these walls. Could somebody, you know, help me try to get someone to read my packet? And I'll tell you what, you know, here's the beauty of Facebook right here. a friend of mine in New York said, well, you know, my twins play with so-and-so's twins, and he's a big guy at Scholastic. It just sounded like the longest shot, like the longest of long shots.
Right.
Well, to make a very long story short, my packet ended up getting handed off to this person during a play date, of all things. And he ended up reading the packet, and there was one story that, you know, struck his fancy. And the story, which ended up getting published, which is called You Mean the World to Me, it originally was a story about being somebody's aunt and being, you know, that sort of fun, crazy aunt who gets to, you know, teach your nieces and nephews all these fun things and impart sort of your wisdom and your humor onto them. And the editor at Scholastic had said, we love this, but can you make it from a mother's point of view, not an aunt, because there's just more of a market there for a mom book. So it's kind of ironic because people say, you know, you have this book about being a mom and being this loving mom, but you're not a mom. Like, how did that happen? Well, it started off being about being, you know, that sort of. It was wild. And so it was one of those long shots that kind of ended up coming to fruition simply because I kind of put it out there to people, hey, I'm trying to get this done. Can somebody help me? And it ended up sort of working, and it took a long time to get it made. But the book came out in 2013, and it's sold over 65,000 copies.
That's amazing.
Which is crazy. And so it's really cool. It's in a lot of libraries all over the country, which I feel super proud of. And I'm trying now to sell. I've been trying, you know, over the last few years, and I just haven't had a sale yet, but I have a bunch of other manuscripts that I'm trying to sell and hopefully have a second book coming out in the, you know, in the next few years. So that's sort of my thing that I do, you know, when I'm not acting, I'm writing. And
nice. Fingers crossed. That would be awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. It's a totally different world than entertainment. It moves very slowly, whereas everything in entertainment moves lightning fast. So it's sort of a good balance for me to have those sort of two things going, yeah.
So cool. Let's take a quick break. I want to play a little bit song. We're going to speaking of the Wild of Wicked Hollywood, we'll play a little Wicked game from our good friend Brandon, and James was on the other day. When we come back, we're going to talk all about Bane's work on Sex and Execs, and I'm going to put her through a little rapid fire on some experiences of other shows she's been on that I just absolutely love. So you listen to Left and Straight Trip. We're talking to Bane Gibby. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Mismo con dudas en salto mortal, aparecen deseos y tú que me haces saltar. Nunca desde este sueño y apareces tú. Nunca desde un amor y apareces tú.
Society, we are back. That was our good friend Brandon and James with Wicked Game, a cover of Chris Isaacson's song. They had a little Spanish twist too. Right now I'm jealous of them. They're cruising through Hawaii on a cruise ship right now performing. Guys, we're back with the amazing comedian, beautifully talented Bane Gibby, and talking all about, she's been in so much stuff. So Bane, let's talk about Sex and Execs first. How was the cast? You had a fun cast to work with. That was kind of cool.
It was so much fun. Yeah, it was a really, really fun cast. I had worked with Mindy Sterling before on a show of Stan's many years ago called Rita Rock. So I knew Mindy and I knew Parvesh. But I was like a massive fan of The Wonder Years when I was growing up. And was a massive fan of Olivia Dabo's character on Wonder Years. I just thought that Karen, you know, the teenager, was like the coolest thing ever, and her clothes and everything. So when I found out that I was going to be playing Olivia's assistant, I was like, oh my God, Karen! Karen's from The Wonder Years. So
I love that. Karen. That's so funny.
So it was really funny. And when I met her, of course, I told her, I was like, I just like wanted to be you. And she's like, oh, that's so hysterical. And of course, you know, she's British and she was playing, you know, an American teenager. So it was, we kind of laughed about that, but we had a great time and we shot it really quickly. You know, I think we shot it in like 4 or 5 days last summer. And that was the beginning of August that we shot. And, just really, you know, had a lot of laughs and had a really good time just kind of having Stan as our director. And that was great. It was just super fun.
It was your character, Val. Talk about your character. She's so funny. I got to see the first 2 episodes. And so now I'm up where everyone else is, so I can't give anything away. But oh,
right.
My goodness, the telephone scene on the second episode, I was dying. You don't even understand how funny that was.
Yeah, so she's, you know, she's sort of a hot mess, you know. She's like a really hot mess with a, you know, with a good heart of gold, but works 2 jobs, and so she's always, you know, frazzled and making mistakes, and, you know, she just kind of is barely, you know, holding it together at every moment, which I kind of love those characters because, you know, they sort of make you feel like a little bit better about yourself.
Right.
You know, the days where you're sort of feeling like that, you're like, well, at least I didn't drop a cake during the company party, you know, the way Val did. So I always love kind of playing those sort of underdog characters. You know, they're a lot of fun to play.
So good. I mean, it's kind of fun, too. You're seeing it from the 2 points of view now. Are there times where you wouldn't see some of the cast? How did he film that? I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but I didn't really get all of the dish from him.
Yeah, so, you know, it's mainly, you know, we were mainly kind of separate where, you know, you shoot the sex stuff, meaning S-E-S, not the secretary.
That came out really good. I like that. That's going to improve the ratings right there. Thank you,
the
Bane.
Secretary stuff. And then you'd sort of, you know, shoot the other side of it, the execs. And then there were just only a few scenes where we were sort of together. There's a boardroom scene where we're all sort of together, but mostly it was like the kind of 2 teams, the secretaries were mainly who I was with all the time. And so I'm sort of watching the episodes with interest because I didn't see a lot of what was shot on other days because, you know, it's sort of like you said, you're seeing the day through 2 points of view, through the secretaries and the executives, which is a really cool way that Stan decided to roll out, you know, the day. It's like, you know, I love that idea that what can be a great day for someone, you know, who works 5 feet away from someone who's having day of their life, because, you know, even though it's the same day, their experiences are completely different. So, you know, Stan knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing there.
He's been around the block once or twice, I think.
He really has. He I think he's going to be okay.
I think he's going to do all right. I mean, hopefully he's still got a little residual of that little Roseanne money and little Golden Girls and Gilmore Girls. And he's got enough girls in his life that he should be doing fine.
I know. I mean, some of the greatest television ever Stan Zimmerman has been involved with. So
he's the greatest.
There you have
I can't
it.
Wait. Yeah, he's like – I was telling you off air, he's directing Mindy in a two-person play right now that I can't wait. I'm going to go see, I think, the opening night. But I just, it's based on his mom and his mom's kind of housekeeper when she was starting to go to get a little bit of dementia there. And it's just perfect Stan, heartwarming and funny at the same time. So I can't wait to see that with Mindy especially because she's so great.
That's gonna be beautiful. I mean, that's sort of really his superpower. I think is you know very funny, but with a lot of heart.
Right.
So
he hits that sweet zone.
Exactly, which you know a lot of people can do really funny, and a lot of people can do sweet, but it's not easy to do both. You know, to have like stuff that really makes you laugh, but then also really hits you with it. There's an emotional resonance, you know. So I think that's where Stan really excels. So
true, and I'm sure as a writer you feel that intensely because, like you said, you kind of it's a hard place to be sometimes, and you really have to sometimes struggle to get that other side of it. So
yeah, exactly, because you want both. I mean, that's what's really going to leave people with something is like, you know, that they laugh, but they also sort of were moved in some way, or there was something universal about what they saw that struck an emotional chord. So, yeah, I think that play is going to be quite something.
It's going to be exciting. All right, well, let's finish up. I want to talk about, I'm just such a huge fan, as I told you, of Everything Entertainment. And you've been in some great things that I'd either seen or people I want to meet. So let's finish off just kind of giving me first impressions or a little mini thoughts on the following things. First, I want to talk about the comeback had its own comeback.
Yeah.
And
you had
to wear a chubby suit for that. How weird was that?
Well, it was weird. I mean, I actually wore a chubby suit toward the end of the first season. Like it was not as big, but they kind of progressively got me to look bigger in the first season. So
right.
I was wearing like, it probably only put on like 15 to 20 pounds, but I was wearing padding that season. And then when we came back all those years later, that suit was supposed to make me look like I had gained 100 pounds.
Oh
so,
my goodness.
Like, so it was like a lot of padding. And I remember that they really had to work very hard to create it, to make it look, you know, realistic. And then, like, I remember the pants that they had were all, like, I think they were essentially like two pairs of pants sewn together. You know, it was like,
oh my goodness.
It was like a lot, there was like a lot going on underneath everything to make it look like a body, like a real body. And of course we shot it on a really hot day. Like all the padding and then the facial prosthetics, they don't hold up very well in heat. So there was like a lot of urgency about shooting the scene literally before my face melted.
Goodness. What's your thoughts on Lisa? I mean, she's supposed to be really smart. She's funny, but give me your first impressions on Lisa.
Oh my gosh. Lisa is brilliant. She's incredibly smart. She's incredibly hardworking, so diligent. She's not Phoebe. You know, she's not Phoebe from Friends.
Right.
When I first met her, you know, I was really struck by, you know, she was carrying this show kind of on her shoulders, and just that her work ethic was just very hardcore in that, you know, she had so much to learn and so much to do, and she was a creator and she was a producer. So every spare moment during these long days was spent, you know, looking at her lines, mouthing the words, you know, just even in a quiet moment, you know, going over what she was going to say. And really just that you could tell how how much she was a crafts person and just how she could take the material and do it in these different ways and make subtle choices, and just that she, you could tell she was a very smart actor and that she was taking advantage of every moment and mining every moment out of the material. And I sort of would watch her and think, wow, that's really, you know, somebody who knows what they're doing.
You know, wow, who's really, that.
Who's just really, you know, creating, like, you know, creating.
That's an acting class in and of
character.
Itself when you're first coming out, I can imagine.
Oh, 100%. I mean, just seeing the way that she would rehearse and then the way she would try different things and kind of come back to other things that were, you know, it was just, you know, she's a pro. She's a pro. That's kind of the simplest way to say it.
Very cool. Okay, next, first impressions or mini thoughts. You're on my all-time favorite series, Shameless. I love William H. Macy. Talk about Shameless. What was that experience like?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was just on Shameless for a hot second. I was there for a read-through and then for the shoot. But I was completely weak in the knees at the read-through because William H. Macy walks into the room and could not have been nicer, and I'm just a huge fan. And then June Squibb walked into the room because she was on this
last
season.
Yeah.
And I'm a massive fan of her. So I was just kind of trying to, you know, hold it together and remember what, like, a normal human acts like. But we had a great time. I mean, I got to shoot one scene, and that show is sort of a well-oiled machine at this point because they're in doing season 7. But what's really wonderful about that show is it's really about the performances, and they take the performances, you know, it's an actor's show, and it's really
right.
all about the performances, whereas, you know, sometimes on something that's a little lighter or fluffier, it's more about, like, the aesthetic and you know, the hair and the makeup and the costumes and this and that. And Shameless
right.
is really a gritty show. And so it was, you know, it was really, there was meticulous attention being paid to the performance, which is always a wonderful experience as an actor to feel like, you know, that they really are trying to get a certain thing and they're going to really focus on that until they get it. So I had a wonderful time. I didn't want to leave. I thought, so this would be a great show to be on.
Nice.
I'd like to stay.
There you go.
Please.
And let's see. Bones is on its last year. I'm a huge David Boreanaz fan. Talk about what was your experience there?
Oh, my God. That was so much fun. I mean, so Bones was a crazy thing for me because I had been auditioning for Bones. I think I had 14 auditions for Bones.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
By the time I got a role on Bones. And so it sort of felt like, okay, it felt like Susan Lucci or something. You know, I was like, okay, finally, you know, I get to
it.
Do this thing on Bones. And what was hilarious about it was just a cold open. And so I was finding the dead body. And the way that I found the dead body was, you know, this is late in the series, so I'm sure they've have to come up with new ways of finding bodies because they've done every way. So this particular situation was my friend and I kind of broke into like a little pond and we're dipping our feet in the pond and started talking, and I'm dangling my feet in the pond, and then all of a sudden my foot gets caught in something. I'm like, oh my God, what is this? What is this? And I lift my foot up and my foot has gotten lodged in the mouth of a dead
Ooh!
Body.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, man.
It was like hysterical because they had to do a fitting. It was almost like a twisted Cinderella where, like, we had to see if my foot fit in the mouth of this,
oh,
like,
that's hilarious.
Life-size,
oh,
dilapidated, you know, waterlogged body. And it was just hysterical. And so we shot at night,
God.
And I had to scream like over and over and over again. I totally felt like I was like, you know, in a horror movie or something. So that was a lot of fun.
How okay? This one I have to whisper in hushed tones. Got to be so reverent. You were across from Betty White. Talk to me.
Yes.
Talk to
that
me.
That was amazing. Betty White is a queen. You know, she's as wonderful as you would think she would be. She was working on a live sitcom, you know, into her, you know, early 90s. This is like 2 years ago. She could not have been kinder. She, you know, in between takes, she was asking me questions about my life and my pets. You know, she's a huge animal activist, so she loves hearing about, you know, people's animals and things. And she's just unbelievable. She's a force of nature. And one of the moments that I'll treasure for my entire life was, you know, I had a line where the woman playing my mother said something. The woman playing my mother was supposed to be Betty's nemesis. So the woman playing my mother says something, and then I look at Betty and I say, like, burn, you know, or something like that. And it made Betty laugh, and she turned to me and she kind of grabbed my hand and she said, "You're so funny." And that was probably the greatest moment of my life.
And I would be okay. I need a moment. I'd run to my trailer, get a tissue. Oh my goodness.
It was like that. I think I just had a total response where my eyes rolled with tears, and I said,
"Oh man."
I said, "Well, you're so funny, and that you don't know how much that means to me." You know, and it was just one of those things where I sort of felt like, you know, sometimes this career is really challenging, and you have a lot of days where you feel kind of beaten up and banged up, and I thought, well, this is one of those moments that's going to really keep me going for a couple of years.
I bet. Oh, my goodness. I love it.
Yeah, it was a real gift. So she's just unbelievable. She's just unbelievable.
All right, a quickie on Laura Dern. She perplexed. She seems so serious. But I don't know if she's serious or fun. Give me a little quickie on Laura Dern.
Oh, Laura's great. You know, Laura's a real California girl. You know, she was raised on movie sets. She was raised in California. So, like, the first day I met her, she's like, "Hey, dude, hey."
Yeah, I love that.
Like, taking off her Ray-Bans and, like, giving you a big hug, you know. And we had a lot of fun on that show. We had a lot of laughs because we were down in that basement, or I was in the basement set, and I never really got out of that basement set. And that was on a soundstage. And so we would start to get, like, really kooky because the lighting was fluorescent. We would kind of lose track of if it was day or night. And,
oh,
you know,
funny.
So we'd get really, like, slap happy. And, yeah, we had a lot of fun on that show. And she's, you know, she's somebody who did her first film when she was 7 years old. And, of course, she's you know, her parents are these icons of, you know, cinema.
Sure.
So it's really like, you know, she is a child of film. And so, you know, she was somebody who also I just loved watching work because she really would live in that character and really, like, get lost in the character. And so it was really a pleasure, you know, watching her work because she's another one who's just a real craft person.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
Mad Men. What do you got about Mad Men? That was you were funny there.
So fun. Thank you. Yeah, I got to be funny. I was such a uber fan of the show. I had auditioned for the show several times, you know, like maybe 3 times, 4 times. I really wanted to be on the show. I was just a massive fan. And I had such a fun day. I was only there for one day. And I got to hang out with Christina Hendricks and Elizabeth Moss the whole day, who could not be more fun. And those two, I mean, talk about brilliant actresses. Those two are unreal at what they do because they're so different in real life than those characters. You know, they really are. And by that time it was season 4, so they were really, you know, comfortable and they were sort of really right in a sweet spot. And I just had a blast. I did not want to leave because that set is a whole world unto itself. I mean, the costumes and the hair and the detail to the set. I mean, it really is like stepping back in time.
Right.
What a gorgeous show. So I feel like that was that would be one of those days where, like, you know, they'd find me hiding in the closet, like, no, babe, you go home now. And I didn't want to leave. I did not want to leave.
Nice.
I wanted to stay. Yeah.
All right, last but not least, another one of my favorites, Parks and Rec. Got to give me a little inside scoop, Parks and Rec.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Parks and Rec was crazy because I actually got a role on the first season. I had, like, a great, you know, couple scenes with Amy Poehler in the first season, and then that was completely cut, just didn't make the episode. And so they had me, yeah, so then they had me back the second season, for an episode that kind of ended up becoming a little bit famous called Galentine's Day, which is about, you know, the day before Valentine's Day you celebrate with your girlfriend.
Right.
And it was a wonderful experience, and still a lot of what we shot was cut and doesn't appear in the episode because at that point they were still improvising a lot, and it was, you know, they usually would have too much material and it would get cut down. But what I will say about that was I had crossed paths several times with Amy Poehler in the years before that and then since then, but getting to be on her set twice was really amazing because she creates this really wonderful, warm atmosphere where it does feel like it's sort of her party and she's the host of the party, and we were playing a game. Yeah, like we were playing a game. I mean, listen, it's taken very seriously, but you can tell that she wants everybody who's there to have a great time and to feel like they're part of something. And we were playing a game where we were naming what celebrities, like if we could cast our parents, what celebrities we'd cast as our parents.
Oh, fun.
You know, we were just having like a fun time. And, you know, Amy Poehler is just an amazing force of nature. And it was her show and she got to, you know, kind of create the environment on set that she wanted to have, which was a really warm, fun vibe where, you know, you kind of look around and go like, I'm getting paid to be here. Like, this is a blast. Huge fan of her and huge fan of the show. Yeah.
Nice. That is awesome. Well, thanks for sharing all that with us. I love having those little inside glimpses you really can't catch anywhere but people that were there. How fun is that?
Yeah. Great. You know, a lot of, you're kind of reminding me of all these, you know, great experiences that I've had. So it's kind of fun to talk about.
Beautiful. Well, I've kept you over time and I apologize for that, but it's been such a great time talking to you. Now we have Sex and Execs is playing on Tello Films. Go to www.tellofilms.com. That's TelloFilms.com. Every Sunday night, a brand new episode. There's two in. You can catch up rather quickly. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you on social media.
Oh, no, I'm on there. My Twitter handle is my name, you know, just at Bayne Gibby, BayneGibby. My handle on everything is my name. I'm easily findable.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We have to have you back sometime very soon when you have something else going on here for us.
It would be my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. All right. Well, stay on the line for me. Bayne will be just 1 second. Guys, we're going to go ahead and finish up here. Thanks so much for listening to the Left and Straight Show today. Tomorrow, we're going to have on singer Stephen Davis. Thanks so much to Bayne Gibby for calling in. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. We're going to play out today a little Casey Lansdale, Living in the Moment. Have a great week, everyone.
Easy to get off track, easy to lose your way. In a world that makes you believe there's no time to waste, that you gotta have it all, better have it all, better not slow down. Looking